That is all, she said. All? Said one of the reporters. Aren't you going to give us a message for the public? That was my message. But hell, I mean, aren't you going to defend yourself? Against what? Don't you want to tell us something to justify your line? I have. A man with a mouth shaped as a permanent sneer asked, Well, what I want to know, as Bertram Scudder stated, is what protection do we have against your line being no good? Don't ride on it. Another asked, Aren't you going to tell us your motive for building that line? I have told you. The profit which I expect to make.
Oh, Miss Taggart, don't say that, cried a young boy.
He was new, he was still honest about his job, and he felt that he liked Dagny Taggart without knowing why.
That's the wrong thing to say. That's what they're all saying about you.
Are they?
I'm sure you didn't mean it the way it sounds, and I'm sure you'll want to clarify it.
Why, yes, if you wish me to. The average profit of railroads has been 2% of the capital invested. An industry that does so much and keeps so little should consider itself immoral. As I've explained, the cost of the John Galt Line in relation to the traffic which it will carry makes me expect a profit of not less than 15% on our investment. Of course, any industrial profit above 4% is considered usury nowadays. I shall nevertheless do my best to make the John Galt Line earn a profit of 20% for me, if possible. That was my motive for building the line. Have I made myself clear now? The boy was looking at her helplessly.
You don't mean to earn a profit for you, Miss Taggart? You mean for the small stockholders, of course, he prompted hopefully.
Why, no. I happen to be one of the largest stockholders of Taggart Transcontinental, so my share of the profits will be one of the largest. Now, Mr. Reardon is in a much more fortunate position, because he has no stockholders to share with. Or would you rather make your own statement, Mr. Reardon?
Yes, gladly, said Reardon. Inasmuch as the formula of Reardon metal is my own personal secret, and in view of the fact that the metal costs much less to produce than you boys can imagine, I expect to skin the public to the tune of a profit of 25% in the next few years.
What do you mean, skin the public, Mr. Reardon? Asked the boy. If it's true, as I've read in your ads, that your metal will last 3 times longer than any other, and at half the price, wouldn't the public be getting a bargain?
Oh, have you noticed that? Said Reardon.
Do the two of you realize you're talking for publication? Asked the man with the sneer.
But, Mr. Hopkins, said Dagny in polite astonishment, is there any reason why we would talk to you if it weren't for publication?
Do you want us to quote all the things you said?
I hope I may trust you to be sure and quote them. Would you oblige me by taking this down verbatim? She paused to see their pencils ready, then dictated, Miss Taggart says, quote, I expect to make a pile of money on the John Galt line. I will have earned it. Close quote. Thank you so much.
Any questions, gentlemen? Asked Reardon.
There were no questions. Now I must tell you about the opening of the John Galt Line, said Dagny. The first train will depart from the station of Taggart Transcontinental in Cheyenne, Wyoming, at 4 p.m. on July 22nd. It will be a freight special, consisting of 80 cars. It will be driven by an 8,000-horsepower, 4-unit diesel locomotive, which I'm leasing from Taggart Transcontinental for the occasion. It will run nonstop to Wyatt Junction, Colorado, traveling at an average speed of 100 miles per hour. I beg your pardon? She asked, hearing the long, low sound of a whistle.
What did you say, Miss Taggart?
I said 100 miles per hour, grades, curves, and all.
But shouldn't you cut the speed below normal, rather than...
Miss Taggart, don't you have any consideration whatever for public opinion?
But I do. If it weren't for public opinion, an average speed of 65 miles per hour would have been quite sufficient.
Who's going to run that train?
I had quite a bit of trouble about that. All the Taggart engineers volunteered to do it. So did the firemen, the brakemen, and the conductors. We had to draw lots for every job on the train's crew. The engineer will be Pat Logan of the Taggart Comet. The fireman, Ray McKim. I shall ride in the cab of the engine with them.
Not really.
Please do attend the opening. It's on July 22nd. The press is most eagerly invited. Contrary to my usual policy, I have become a publicity hound. Really? I should like to have spotlights, radio microphones, and television cameras. I suggest that you plant a few cameras around the bridge. The collapse of the bridge would give you some interesting shots.
Miss Taggart, asked Reardon, why didn't you mention that I'm going to ride in that engine, too?
She looked at him across the room, and for a moment they were alone, holding each other's glance.
Yes, of course, Mr. Reardon, she answered.
She did not see him again until they looked at each other across the platform of the Taggart station in Cheyenne on July 22nd. She did not look for anyone when she stepped out on the platform. She felt as if her senses had merged, so that she could not distinguish the sky, the sun, or the sounds of an enormous crowd, but perceived only a sensation of shock and light. Yet he was the first person she saw, and she could not tell for how long a time he was also the only one. He stood by the engine of the John Galt train, talking to somebody outside the field of her consciousness. He was dressed in gray slacks and shirt. He looked like an expert mechanic. But he was stared at by the faces around him because he was Hank Reardon of Reardon Steel. High above him, she saw the letters TT on the silver front of the engine. The lines of the engine slanted back, aimed at space. There was distance and a crowd between them, but his eyes moved to her the moment she came out. They looked at each other, and she knew that he felt as she did. This was not to be a solemn venture upon which their future depended, but simply their day of enjoyment. Their work was done. For the moment, there was no future. They had earned the present. Only if one feels immensely important, she had told him, can one feel truly light. Whatever the train's run would mean to others, for the two of them, their own persons, were this day's sole meaning. Whatever it was that others sought in life, their right to what they now felt was all the two of them wished to find. It was as if across the platform, they said it to each other. Then she turned away from him. She noticed that she, too, was being stared at, that there were people around her, that she was laughing and answering questions. She had not expected such a large crowd. They filled the platform, the tracks, the square beyond the station. They were on the roofs of the boxcars on the sidings, at the windows of every house in sight. Something had drawn them here, something in the air which, at the last moment, had made James Taggart want to attend the opening of the John Galt line. She had forbidden it. If you come, Jim, she had said, I'll have you thrown out of your own Taggart station. This is one event you're not going to see. Then she had chosen Eddie Willers to represent Taggart Transcontinental at the opening. She looked at the crowd, and she felt simultaneously astonishment that they should stare at her when this event was so personally her own that no communication about it was possible, and a sense of fitness that they should be here, that they should want to see it, because the sight of an achievement was the greatest gift a human being could offer to others. She felt no anger toward anyone on earth. The things she had endured had now receded into some outer fog, like pain that still exists but has no power to hurt. Those things could not stand in the face of this moment's reality. The meaning of this day was as brilliantly, violently clear as the splashes of sun on the silver of the engine. All men had to perceive it now. No one could doubt it, and she had no one to hate. Eddie Willers was watching her. He stood on the platform surrounded by Taggart executives, division heads, civic leaders, and the various local officials who had been out-argued, bribed, or threatened to obtain permits to run a train through town zones at 100 miles an hour. For once, for this day and event, his title of vice president was real to him, and he carried it well. But while he spoke to those around him, his eyes kept following Dagny through the crowd. She was dressed in blue slacks and shirt. She was unconscious of official duties. She had left them to him. The train was now her sole concern, as if she were only a member of its crew. She saw him, she approached, and she shook his hand. Her smile was like a summation of all the things they did not have to say. Well, Eddie, you're Taggart Transcontinental now. Yes, he said solemnly, his voice low.